Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Education Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. Go to my website, TotalTutor.org, to find out more information on the Total Education Network, now syndicated on 80-plus stations. Go to the website, check it out. Also, in a birth or college tutoring consulting company, you can call me at 412-523-0289. I feel like, Jared, I've hit the wall. And I think that always the beginning of the school year, things we start to get a little colder outside. You know, you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh, my gosh, it's cold. You know, the summer's so nice that it takes some time. And I think it takes time with kids as well. Maybe that could be our topic for tomorrow, this just rude awakening. Like, you know, school starts, everyone's excited, ready to go. But then once it cools down, it's hard to get your son up from out of bed in the morning, right?
It certainly can be. You know, fortunately, I really like what I do. Getting out of bed is you know, kind of a just a very nice way to get started in my day. You know, I like what I do, so it's not hard to get out of bed. In fact, tomorrow morning, I'll be starting at bright and early at 7:30 in the morning.
Well, you'll be starting at 7:30. I'll be interviewing at 5:30 in the morning. One of our sister stations in London, I'm interviewing one of them on an education topic involving the UK's college system. So I decided to coordinate. Well, my studio time, 5:30 in the morning, will be 11:30 in London. So, So I'll be up at night, and I'll say I want to be done at midnight tonight. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of go right to the topic. That last week we were really pushing the whole importance of early intervention, and you kind of just gave your testimonial. Now I think that we talked about my whole idea of maybe compulsory early childhood education, birth to three. Now, let's continue this process and discussion and tips to let parents know that, you know, we were talking about, you know, how important it is, why it's so important when we're looking at schools and everything. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, well, not I think, but I know, you know, one of the things that we deal with, especially as a family-based therapist, a behavior therapist, and a developmental therapist, all my three areas of really my specialty within early intervention, you know, from as a family-based therapist, someone working with parents, one of the, you know, not exactly a nightmare, but one of the worst things you can find out, discover here, is that your child has challenges, you know, might have learning delays, may have a disability that is absolutely noticeable, all the fear that brings, the anxiety that can bring, also the isolation, because no matter how much people are supportive, you know, sometimes your friends with children, they're not exactly sure what to say, what to do, so there can be isolation, even though in general, people are good-hearted. They want to help out. They want to do something. They don't have to have a child with a disability or challenges to know what that feels like. But in my experience, it has become something that can really kind of isolate, almost make parents lonely, especially if they're new parents. So that's looking at it from a parent's perspective. Now let's look at it from really even just the scientific perspective. And sure, you know, our listeners will know that there's books out there that have kind of questioned the idea of the birth to three, birth to five being the most significant years in a child's development. You can find plenty of books that support that, Neil. You can find certainly, there's a number of books out there that question that. I'm not sure enough research is out there to really kind of disprove the importance of early intervention.
Right, and I think that's the one problem out there, Jared, is that they're right, that some people believe that early childhood education is such an important thing, while others believe that they remain the same by fourth grade.
I think there's a book out there that was published a few years ago titled The Early Intervention Myth or The Birth to Three Myth that really, I think, was a setback as far as really kind of accepting this as an idea. But But here's where the science doesn't lie, and that is that the brain's most significant development in the frontal cortex, the prefrontal cortex, language, all of those things are, all of those parts of the brain are underdeveloped at birth. We know that. We know exactly that. And from an evolutionary standpoint, they need to be that way. So, you know, we're genetically engineered for those to be underdeveloped so that we can mature, that we can grow. That we know. So this is where I would try to kind of disagree with the books out there questioning the importance of early childhood and early intervention. Science has shown us that the brain is underdeveloped, especially in those more sophisticated areas, for good reason. Now here comes the role of early intervention, early childhood education. We are able to develop a strategy, a system of strategies built within the basic routine. You don't need $1 million, $100, $1,000 programs to do this. Are they helpful? Is money helpful? Absolutely. But you don't need to be buying these things off TV. We're going to be going right into the home, and we're going to establish that environment right there within that home.
And that's so true. I think that I completely agree with you that you have a situation where if this is something that's based on the daily routines of the family, and that you could teach so many skills, but if those gaps are missing, they really do hurt them in school. And that's the thing that's not out there in the studies. They're talking about, you know, the average. Oh, yeah. So the average student, if they even have, they progress them and they read early, it doesn't matter at all. But we're not looking at the special needs child, which I think in our environment is the biggest problem in education right now, is that we don't know how to educate them.
And that's exactly right. What you have, you know, I'm going to interrupt you here because this is a very important kind of idea that you have just put out there for our listeners. What you said was early intervention, early childhood development lays the groundwork. It's the foundation for the lifelong education, for the lifelong skills. That's the significance of it. You know, would it happen without early intervention? It might, but I can show you, again, our listeners can go out there and do the research on their own. I can't show them now, but in our book, they'll absolutely see this. But, you know, 30 years ago, children who were institutionalized, set aside, 50 years ago, we can take a look at those children who were adults. We can see that their lifespans were much shorter. The average person with Down syndrome maybe had a 40, 45, 50-year lifespan. It's much now. Certainly, there are also, people would argue, there's been medical advancements, and that is so true. But the quality of life changed to a healthier lifestyle, a more productive lifestyle. With that comes a better life, and I think longevity.
Oh, definitely. So true. And so I guess what we have to do is to really see the importance of this. So, like, if we're talking areas like mathematics, that early, you're exposing them to math that's going to help them later on. And I think that's one of the things, tips for parents to understand, is when education begins at birth, and I say in the womb, so that you have kids that are developing throughout, and that every moment counts. And we don't really spend enough resources, research on this age level.
Well, you know, you mentioned within the womb, in utero, prenatal care is perhaps the most significant contribution a parent can make to their child. You know, again, we'll have people out there that might say, I was born in the 50s, I was born in the 60s, my mother smoked, everybody drank. You know, we don't know the entire set of consequences. You know, we don't know why so many children were born healthy, and today in those same situations we have fetal alcohol syndrome, we have conditions related to cigarette smoking that may not be totally evident, provable. But the point is, you know, we know that prenatal care makes a difference, and that's the first step. There you go. There's the first brick in the foundation, is the prenatal care. You know, there's, again, we can, in our book, we've highlighted this, and we'll continue with this, but there's plenty of research out there that shows that the money that has you know, the more money that is put into early childhood education, the higher return you get, meaning the less money you have to put into other programs as a child gets older, whether that is direct special education with the school, opportunities for higher education. And most significantly, though, the reduction of children who are finding problems within law enforcement, you know, having trouble with breaking the law. I mean, that evidence is showing there, especially in communities that have a higher poverty rate.
We look at lots of research with this age with medical. We look at all the medical developments of them. We don't look at the developmental development methods. And that's the thing. We'll look at medically, okay, this is what they're supposed to be doing. This is how they're doing it. But we never relate that to education, and that's the problem. I think that when families out there are looking at saying, okay, I'm about to work on Johnny crawling, that's going to help him find motor skill. I mean, on gross motor skills and all these different things later on. And if you're teaching them while doing it, you're exposing them to education. And
absolutely no question. I'm going to jump in here because, you know, only 2 weeks ago, I think I said to a family, a child who had just started sitting up to explore, I pointed out to them, I even said, look what they're able to do with their, look at what your little one's able to do with their hands now. These are all things that they could not do. Look how he's grabbing these puzzle pieces. I mean, again, our listeners might hear the excitement in my voice and might even wonder, how can you be so excited? But when you see this happen, and from there, the child had just started sitting up, maybe we're going to talk 7, 8 months of age, you know, a little bit delayed. But I said to them, I said, do you have a spoon, a toddler spoon handy? I said, I want to just try something. And the child, we put the toddler spoon down. He reached out, grabbed it out, fisted, and brought it up to his mouth and started chewing and on it. So, yeah, it was a big deal. It was very significant in all areas. But that's going to lead to that child self-feeding maybe a little bit sooner than what we anticipated. And that all came from changing that position, you know, getting that child to be able to sit up on his own.
So at the end of this book, when we're looking at EI and early intervention with all the different tips that you provided in the book, I think the key thing in the last minute is to say that, again, that this is the building blocks in education, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it is the foundational elements of education and lifelong learning. I'm even going to say it's greater than what certainly our listeners, our readers will soon know our passion for early intervention and education, but, you know, particularly in early intervention, they'll recognize my passion. It starts there. Everyone knows in our listening community knows my son is perhaps my biggest and greatest scientific challenge. The things that the very strategies that we've shared here, I have used with my son, still has many challenges. There's no question about it. Life was not exactly fair to him, but he has made so much progress in being able to behave, to follow rules, to pay attention. Still a long way to go. But I have to believe, I truly believe it is the work that the early intervention therapist that we had, the work that my wife and I and all our family members do. I absolutely believe that even at 6 years of age, this little guy would have been lost without these kind of supports that were in place. But again, it's the building block. Everything that we do with my son at 6 started when we adopted him at 18 months.
All right. Well, again, a great conversation. We're almost finished with the season one of the book. And again, then the new book starts and we new writing, and we just keep coming with some great tips. So thanks again for calling, Jarrett. We'll be in touch, okay?
Always glad to be a part of the show, Neil.
All right, take care. All right, that was Jarrett. You're listening to the Total Education Show on the Total Education Network. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Show on the Total Education Network. Remember, go to my website, TotalTutor.org, for more information. One of my favorite things at the Miami Book Fair last year and already this year is interviewing children's book authors. Why? Because I have so many books everywhere. My wife and I being teachers, my children are immersed in books, children's books all the time. And when I get the chance to talk to them, it's so fantastic. And I just believe today, for some reason, just because I love the title of this book, I said, wow, we got to have her on. I want to welcome the program, Sherry North. Sherry, thanks for calling.
Hi, Neil. Thanks so much for having me on the program.
You are author of Because You Are My Teacher. And when I heard that title, and I got to show this to my wife when she gets home tonight. She's on maternity leave right now. We just had our fourth. But this is something we need to highlight is how great teachers are and that we have great teachers. And, you know, in the environment we're in right now, Sherry, teacher bashing is becoming the biggest thing in the world. So having a children's book like this to kind of really show the importance of teaching, I think that's great.
Thank you. Well, first, let me congratulate you on the new edition. That's wonderful. And I'd like to tell everybody that the inspiration for this book actually was my son's kindergarten teacher. I wrote it while he was in kindergarten, and he had this incredible teacher who taught him to read in a few short months. And I think even more than teaching him to read, she taught him how much fun learning could be. And that is so critical during that first year of school, that kids get the idea that learning is satisfying and exciting and fun. And she really did that. So I was thinking about how can you say thank you to a teacher who has done such a wonderful job? So I wanted to create the book to sort of give an original but really heartfelt thank you to all of those teachers who do this amazing work with our children every day. And I also wanted the book to be useful for teachers in the classroom so that they could get kids even more excited about school. And the way the book is set up, it's the teacher taking the class on adventures all over the world. And I think it really serves as a jumping off point for talking about geography, geology, all of the different subjects that they cover in school. There's a tie-in somewhere in this book.
Absolutely. And I think I want to commend you for this, because my wife's a kindergarten teacher, and she would be honored if someone had written a book about her. And to say, because again, kindergarten teachers, they're always forgotten a lot of times. It's too bad. I mean, because they are the first teacher most of the time for most kids, and that they really make learning fun. And I guess that you saw this teacher and said, wow, what you did for my child is amazing. And I don't know how I could ever thank you, but by doing this, I'm sure she was very excited.
Thank you. And I think what you say is true, that children, when they grow up, they often don't remember their kindergarten teachers, but that doesn't mean that what that kindergarten teacher did is in any way forgotten, because they have really influenced that child's life. If they gave them a good experience, a good foundation for reading, writing, math, all of that starts in kindergarten now. So it really has an impact on the rest of their education, even if they don't specifically remember that teacher.
Yeah, and I think that kindergarten teachers are a special breed. They're just special people, because they have the patience of a saint, and yet also they are so much fun, and they're so creative, and they really kind of, I don't know many kids that don't enjoy going to kindergarten. Wouldn't you agree? So I think that that's the kind of, and I could see from the cover of the book with the hot air balloon, that just shows how much teachers are able to be so creative in exploration. And I'm sure that's what's in the book in so many ways.
The cover of the book really is a metaphor, because it does show the teacher with some of her students in a hot air balloon, and then they're looking out on different parts of the world, and the teacher is kind of pointing off into the distance. And that's really what a good teacher does, is introduces her class to the world, to all the fascinating things that we have to learn about. And I think that the image, which is designed by Marcellus Hall, a wonderful illustrator, it really captures the spirit of that very well.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it's just a very nice cover. And I looking at the back of back cover, it just again shows that the teacher is not, I guess kindergarten teachers are facilitators. They facilitate learning. They open up the senses for kids to enjoy. The best thing for any teacher to do is to go and observe a kindergarten teacher, a preschool teacher, because they have such a passion about teaching. They love to teach, but they also just have this belief and understanding of children and how that they all learn differently and that they all need to be accepted for their differences. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. I think they have incredible stamina, too, for anybody who's been around that age child. They are so full of energy. They don't stop moving. And for a teacher, you have to keep up with that throughout the day. You have to always be on and be animated and be ready to go. So I think what they do is amazing. And I was really, really pleased to be able to write this book to express my gratitude and my amazement with the job that they do.
We're talking to Sherry North, author of Because You Are My Teacher. And the title just motivated me to say, I have to talk to Sherry about this. But Sherry, I guess that you took all the experiences of your child and saw the experiences and said, wow, how can I make this a children's book, right? And then also the teachers can be involved in it. So the process of doing this, I'm sure that because you're already a children's book author, you said, oh, I can do this, and I really want to welcome this, but how can I? So I guess you looked at a lot of your experiences that you dealt with, the smile on your child's face coming home every day from school and learning about what they were doing that kind of gave you ideas to do this?
Absolutely. Like the excitement. Some days my son would actually come home and say to me, you won't believe what we learned about today. You know, and he'd launch into some detailed description of something they'd been talking about in class. And it made me so happy to see him so excited and to see him really retaining what he learned in class. So absolutely, it was the sense of excitement, I think, that really inspired me to write this. And then the specific mode that I used for writing this book, it's the third in a series from Abrams, all illustrated by Marcellus Hall. The first is Because You Are My Baby, and the second is Because I Am Your Daddy, which was written because my husband didn't like the fact that the first book was all about a mom and her baby. Like, wait a minute, don't leave the dads out. So the second one is about a dad and his daughter, and those two books show the parent and child going on a series of adventures with the parent in the role of a different profession on every page. So the dad might be a surfer or the mom might be a baker, and they do all these different adventures. So I wanted to sort of stay in keeping with that theme when I wrote Because You Are My Teacher. So what I did instead, obviously the teacher can't change professions because she's a teacher. I changed the mode of transportation. So they're riding camels on one page. They're in a hot air balloon on another page. And I think that adds to a level of excitement. So it's not only the places that they visit, but how they get there.
So have you enjoyed reading this book to people, to go into classrooms? Have you gotten the opportunity to do that where you can see the response? And you said you really think teachers can utilize this book in their classroom to teach a lot of different, especially social studies, the ability to understand how much they should enjoy and love their teacher, would you say? Or have you gotten the opportunity to read in front of the different classes the book yet?
Yes, I've read it in a couple of classrooms so far and really enjoyed it. The kids were absolutely engaged in the story. They were looking for each page. What was the new mode of transportation going to be? They were trying to guess at where it is. There's one page with the pyramids, so the kids are shouting, Egypt, and they were very excited about it. And then what I do to get them even more involved, and this is something that any teacher can do in the classroom to kind of encourage creative thinking and just to extend the book into a realm where the kids get to make their own adventures, is after you've read the entire story, you can use a bag of props, or if you don't have props, you can just write down the different modes of transportation on scraps of paper. When I do it, I use a bag that has little toy fire engine, toy car, toy airplane, and I call the kids up one by one. They don't look. They pull something out of the bag, and then whatever mode of transportation they get, they have to make up their own adventure for the class, where they would go and what they would see. So it takes it even one step more.
So the adventure is a huge part of being a kindergarten teacher, just having kids have adventures. It's not something where they're sitting and paper pencil like we're seeing a lot of kindergarten classrooms becoming now. And I think that hopefully this book gets out that, guess what, the creativity of a teacher cannot be lost. We cannot lose what this picture shows of this teacher and how motivated she is to teach these students and to have them with their first experiences in the classroom be enjoyable. And I think that's another goal, is you're seeing what's happening in our education field, what's happening with how we're trying to change things and not allow kindergartens to be learning environments for fun, but just a place to just learn to read and write and do math. That I think that you, your experience that your son has, you want to make sure that every kindergarten teacher can provide that for their students, correct?
I absolutely agree with you. Well, it's really important that our children learn to read, write, do math, you know, and at a young age, that's very important. But before they learn those things, they have to learn to love learning. Because if they're not motivated, then the rest of it is just not going to stick.
So, Sherry, tell us how you became a children's book author. What kind of gave you that motivation to do that? Because again, the show, I kind of really, as an education talk show, also look at specifically people out there in the listening audience that might want to write a children's book.
So that's a great question. I think it's a pretty interesting story. Back in the day, I was working as a producer at CNN Headline News in Atlanta.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a very exciting job, but the news, as we know, often is not good.
Yeah.
So sometimes at the end of a day of writing just the facts, I wanted to write something that was more creative and happier. And I didn't have any children yet at the time, but I just started writing children's stories as kind of an outlet, as kind of an escape from writing about the news. And then as I had my own children, it was, of course, even more motivating to stick with that, and gave me all sorts of new inspiration.
And I think it helped being in the media already to kind of get your foot in the door to get going on this. I'm sure that you learned, met so many people at CNN. You're like, okay, now I got to take what I was able to do as a producer there and sell people on how good of an author I am, right? Because again, not all children's books authors get discovered. You have to really get out there and be able to stick your neck out, right?
Yes, and I have to say, it is tough being on the other side of, you know, of the camera, if you will, or the phone in this case, because as a producer, often I ask questions to a guest that we might be having, and it's definitely a different experience being on the other side of it, but surely it did give me some insight having done that for so many years.
Oh, I'm sure. Knowing the publicity game and the field, that is such a key component of success to market yourself, because you learn both ends of situations. Doing radio interviews always is a nerve-wracking thing, especially when you were the one kind of spinning everything at CNN, to now not being in control, waiting to see what that host is going to ask next. I've learned really quickly, I guess I'm a gift of gab. I don't mind being interviewed at all as well. So it's definitely a place for me that I enjoy. So where can we find more information on you, Sherry? Purchase your book and learn more about all the books you've written so far.
If you go to my website, sherrynorth.com, that's S-H-E-R-R-Y, north.com, you can read all about me and my books and the programs I offer for schools as well.
And tell me a little bit, we have about a couple of seconds, what programs do you offer for the schools, just based on the book and lesson plans, kind of?
I offer a Secrets of Strong Writing program, which gives children about 7 keys to making their writing stronger. And I also offer for younger kids How a Book is Born, which just goes through the process of how a book comes to be.
So you see how important writing is, and you want to continue to enjoy, have kids enjoy the creative end of things, not being forced into writing prompts, but learn creativity, learn, and seeing how art classes are being cut and the creativity in classes. You want to be out there telling the schools, this is going to help a standardized test, and this is going to help kids become better at what they do. And that's fantastic that you're doing that with the schools. And I appreciate you taking the time today to talk to me, Sherry, and really, really want to get the word out about the book, and love to have you back to talk about some of your other children's books and new ones that come out. So I appreciate you calling.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
All right, take care, Sherry. Okay.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. That was Sherry North, author of Because You Are My Teacher. You're listening to the Total Education Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment.